Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
You're listening to All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart, live from the WNYC studios in Soho. Thank you for sharing part of your day with us. We also ask you to share your thoughts about Tina Turner. We'll be reading some of your texts on the air. You can text us at 212-433-9692. Send a text to 212-433-WNYC. Quick programming note, on tomorrow's show, we're going to send you into the holiday weekend with a great book recommendation. We're going to be playing an excerpt from our recent live Get Lit with All of It event, our conversation with author Victor LaValle, whose book Lone Women follows a Black woman homesteader in 1915 Montana and the secret she brings with her from California. We'll also hear a performance from our special musical guest, banjo player Kaya Cater. That is in the future. Let's get this hour started with Aja Monet. Aja Monet couples her poetry with music on her debut album called When Poems Do What They Do. Let's listen to a track. This is part of the first track called I Am.
I am a flower pot sitting on the subway platform dreaming of a southern sky. I am the southern sky. Bruised hues of blues in inner city with an oceanfront view. A Holy Ghost tongue possessed between the pews, sleepless in the twilight. A vision board invisible to eyesight, loose hips humming under summer porch lights. I'm the djembe drum.
As a surrealist blues poet, Monet's work often explores gender, race, migration, and spirituality. She's been creating since she was very young. And in 2007, at just 19 years old, she became the youngest Grand Slam poetry champion at New Yorker's Poet Cafe. Her 2018 debut poetry collection, titled My Mother Was a Freedom Fighter, received an NAACP Image Award nomination. And now her latest project engages with trumpet, piano, flutes, bass, djembe drum. Say it for me.
Djembe.
Thank you. Djembe drum, accompanying her words, recited in a conversational style of a salon. Throughout the album, Aja touches on themes such as Black liberation, love, harm, and joy, subjects that factor prominently in her work as a community organizer. When Poems Do What They Do drops on Friday, June 9th, and she's going to host an album release event at Legacy Dumbo at 7 p.m. that evening. But she joins us now in studio. So nice to see you.
Yeah, it's so great to be here. Thank you for having me.
I know last time was on Zoom, so I'm happy to be able to look you in the eyes in real life. What themes came to you when you decided you were going to go for a debut album? What themes did you know you wanted to tackle?
Well, the album is really a reflection of years of work as a poet. Mm-hmm. And it really comes in the legacy and the tradition of poets who came before me who made records. There were many mm-hmm. poets who have made records before. I think that history has been really erased from the music industry. But we think about Amiri Baraka, Jane Cortez, Sekou Sundiata. You know, the list goes on, Gil Scott-Heron, the list goes on and on. And so for me, it wasn't so much about needing to come to the album with a theme as much as it was, how do I reflect the years of writing poems and being a performer who has always saw what I do in some form or fashion, an extension of music and blues and soul. And so, yeah, I wanted to reflect the years of work in a really good way. Mm-hmm. And I wanted it to feel live. I wanted it to feel like a live album where people were in the room with us experiencing the poems in the movement of them.
What do you know about making an album that you didn't know before you started?
Ooh. I learned a lot. I've helped a lot of artists over the years, and I've been very supportive of other people in their process of making records. So I know I was familiar with the record making process, but this was really unique in the sense that, one, it was COVID. It was the middle of lockdown. So there was, you know, an air of, I think, about being among each other as musicians and as performers. There was this sort of sacredness of really appreciating and valuing what it was like to perform together again after a year or two, you know, of really being away from the thing that, that you feel called to, that is your purpose. And so there was that. And then there was the just the awareness that recording is its own unique, special experience where you're not necessarily in front of an audience. So you don't have that same engagement. So you have to bring that spirit into the room. Mm-hmm. And it's really important to have good engineers. I mean, having a great engineer is, as you know, recording every day, but having people who really, really understand what it is, what sound is, and what it is to document sound and to archive good sound. I mean, that's a whole other world that I really became fascinated with.
Did you come out of COVID differently as a creative? Some people, you know, some people grew during COVID. Some people, the isolation wasn't good for their creative process. Did you change at all creatively?
Yeah, I think it would be, you know, remiss of me not to say I didn't. Like, all of us were changed, I hope. Yeah. I would hope. And I think that that's what made sort of the sense of urgency around life and presence and being aware of the gift of gathering with people and the ability to share your gifts and the ability to be with one another. I think in some ways, many of us took for granted the just mundane reality of sharing presence with each other. And so I think there is a newfound sense of urgency and a need to connect and a longing to be among the people that make me feel most present and most aware.
I want to play another track from the album. This one is called, my glasses on, sorry about that. Mm-hmm. This one is called Why My Love from Aja Monet.
My love, be a front line. My love, be a fighter, a shade that sisters and saves. My love, survive the middle passage, waded the waters. My love, be grassroots, organizes movements. The birds, the bees, my love, be butterflies beaming. My love, be indigenous, ocean wide, sky deep. My love, listens to the land. All natural, no preservatives, my love, be homemade from scratch. Scribbled handwritten notes, adoration. My love, be scripture, be ritual, baptism, revival. A cathedral built from bare hands, a Taj Mahal, all the temples. My love creates new ways to worship. Serenity, sorcery, hieroglyphs across your chest, tongue tied. My love, be sacred geometry. Past life premonitions, revelations and gratitude, prayer hands. My love be call and response. Praise the eyelashes and the eyes. My love be a river like the Nile, ancient and long. My love be a crowd of shyness. Secret messages in the rosy red of deep dimples. My love.
That's
be
from the forthcoming album, When the Poems Do What They Do. My guest is Aja Monet. So that began as a list poem.
Mm-hmm.
What is the process of taking a list poem and making it a piece of music? Is it easier? Is it different than other poems?
No, I think that as a poet and in the tradition and the, I guess, in the tradition of Black radical tradition of making poetry, we are sonic beings. We understand that what we're doing is sound as much as it is language, and language, I guess, sound is language and language is sound. And so for me, it was musical writing it. Way that I deal with words, I see words as sounds, as a capturing sound in some way, symbols of sound. And so it's really important to think about what words sound good together. As I'm writing, I'm also saying and speaking. And so I have a really big relationship to the oral tradition. And so I think that when I'm making this poem, it wasn't any different. It was just also thinking about what is love and what are the things that come up for me with love in a sentimental way, but also in a sonic and an emotional. What are the things you want to hear someone say when you're talking about love? And what are the things that we neglect to kind of acknowledge as a part of love, as it's as complicated as it is? So that poem came, yes, as a list poem, but it was always musical because I think language is musical.
So Andrew, you should say that, because sometimes I'll write something or someone on my team will write something and it's beautiful on the page, but when you say it out loud, it maybe doesn't have the same energy that you wanted it to have. Whereas when you read it, it's like, oh, wow, that's really something. But when you say it out loud, when you, because we're in this oral
yeah.
medium, you have to make sure that it sounds inviting. You have to make sure it sounds like a good question for the guest, that they can understand what you're saying. Whereas when you read it, you're like, oh, yeah, but when you hear it, it's different.
Well, it's also your energy that you bring to it, right? Like, there are certain things that, I mean, people that if they read the newspaper, they read the label off of the back of this, you know, Clorox disinfectant, you know, bottle, then they could still make you be like, wow, I need to go buy that, or I need to use that, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think it's also about what you put into words, what energy you put into them, that can get the other person, the listener, to really feel and resonate with what you're saying, because it's all vibration at the end of the day.
Some of your social bios say that you are a surrealist, blues poet, teacher, and community organizer. When you think about surrealism, how does it work with poetry? Or what about poetry works with surrealism?
Well, you think of like Amy Césaire or his wife, or the Negritude poets. I mean, mm-hmm. surrealism is a part of our tradition. I think what surrealism, I mean, this is surreal right now, let's be clear. Being here with you talking about this project that one day was a dream and now it's about to come out and people are listening to me somewhere in New York City right now where I grew up, walking these streets, imagining and envisioning and dreaming up a world where I could be this artist. You know, this is surreal. Mm-hmm. And I think when we recognize and tap into our surrealist visions for ourselves, I think that's when we can transform our current reality and we can reach the imaginative possibility of who we are. Mm-hmm. And so I think surrealism is always a part of our everyday lives. It's the thing that we do when we're wandering or daydreaming in the middle of the day. And it's how do we access and harness our most creative, imaginative selves on a day-to-day basis. And the poem is not just the written word. The poem is a way of being. It's a way of seeing the world. So I think that that's what I want to invite people into, is how do we embody the poetry of our lives and how do we become the poets that this current world needs?
When did you first become aware of the blues?
Ooh. Well, growing up with a single mom in New York City was a way to learn the blues, for sure, you know? Mm-hmm. I think everybody knows the blues. I mean, just like everybody knows, you know, love and joy. I mean, they're human experiences that we have where we feel sometimes at our wit's end. We feel like we can't go on. You don't see a way out or another possible avenue into a conflict or in a situation, and you want to give up. And I think blues is the wailing of that exhaustion, you know, mm-hmm. the longing to connect, the longing to be connected. And so I think I learned it very young, but it connects when you hear music that really, really touches on that and gets you to express something that maybe you couldn't have expressed before. You know, I think of everything great in American music comes from the blues. The blues is probably the greatest invention we've ever had as American people, as a culture. And so I think really honoring that the blues, you can find the blues in almost any song coming out of this country. Mm-hmm. And really the blues is African. If you think about really the first blues that African people sung on the shores of this land. So I think the blues is integrated in so much of the music we hear in hip hop and R&B and soul. The blues, I mean, Tina Turner, talk about someone that was a blues musician, mm-hmm. and really took it into the extent of what we call rock and roll, right? But the blues was the first rock and roll. It was the first mm-hmm. time to rock the ship of this country, you know? And so I think that if we trace any music in America, we would always find the blues.
My guest is poet and performer and musician Aja Monet. The name of the forthcoming album is When the Poems Do What They Do. It's coming out on June 9th. We're having a pre-release listening party. Let's listen to another track from the album, The Devil You Know. What would you want our listeners to listen for as we play a little bit of this, about a minute or so?
Oh, yeah, the devil's in the details, and we should be paying attention because there's a lot that's happening right now that we need to be aware of, and we can always do something about it. So,
this is The Devil You Know.
Oh, The devil you know taxes the air we breathe, privatizes the water, profits off homelessness, strangles the land and injects hormones in animals, rapes the people and rewards the rich, charges you for being sick, sends a bill to your loved ones with interest when you die, laughs at us coughing up our lungs, gulping water lead dripping off our chins, buys private ships to the moon, dancing with your demons, the selfish, individualistic part of you, the one who rather not have a foot on your neck, or who shows up to the rally after sipping sweet comfort at a corporate gig that pays you just enough to die a little slower, tithing community, fostering care, how being black or woman or queer or trans or other or human or inhumane, computer or code, able body, 10 fingers, 10 toes, running or right or wrong. How none of it
that
matters.
Is Aja Monet. Who are we hearing? Who are the musicians on that track?
Yes, we have some incredible musicians that were part of this album. Christian Scott on trumpet. We have Samora Pinderhughes on keys. We have Luquez Curtis on bass. We have Elena Pinderhughes on flute. I don't know if she's on this specific one. And we have Weedy Brima on djembe and congas. As the band. I think that's everyone. Oh, Marcus Gilmore. How could I forget? Marcus Gilmore on drums, the legend himself, who's actually based here in New York. So, yeah.
Now, there's a short film that goes with The Devil You Know, about 9 minutes. Did you storyboard that project? How did you begin to try to figure out what the imagery would be
yeah.
for that piece?
Oh, that's such a good question. I was working with an incredible filmmaker named Khalil Joseph in LA. He has this project called Black News, and he's working on a film. And so he brought me in and asked me if I would like to be a part of the process. And in that process, I got to see his editing team, and he has this crew called Parallax. And I've always wanted to be a filmmaker or at least direct at some point. But it was really beautiful to see that really the film is made in the editing. And so working with some of the editors, I knew that at one point I would love to use the process at which they use, which is they work a lot with archival. And I'm an archival head. I'm always archiving things on, you know,
really?
from the time I was, you know, before it was a thing on social media. I was always saving videos, clips, things like that, photos.
You get a lot of folders?
Yeah. Oh, my God. I'm like, they think I'm a hoarder, but it's all archiving, I promise. And so, yeah, then when it came to doing this, we had documented the album making process at Westlake Recording Studio in LA. We had film crew, this sister Vashni and Amani, they both came and filmed, but we didn't know for sure how we would use the footage. And when I look at some of these songs, a lot of them, the power in them is the presence of the performance and the actual live performance. So I knew I wanted to bring that for people. I knew I wanted people to experience that. It's also going to be part of a larger film. So that edit that we put out for The Devil You Know was a sketch that we did that was for the vision of a feature-length film.
Oh, wow.
And we were experimenting, and one of the editors made that experimentation with some of the archival that we've been gathering. Mm-hmm. And I had described the vision for this visual that I had, and he literally created the most accurate representation of what I saw in my head. And so, yeah, it's a really powerful piece, and I hope people really do get to enjoy it.
What was the first song you recorded?
During this process, for the record?
For the record, the first
one. Whoa, that's a good question. It's the first time I've ever been asked this. What did we do? What was the first one? I don't remember. Hmm. I don't know if it might have been... It might have been I Am, but they didn't come out the way that they are. The way that they are in the album, it's not how they came out.
Yeah.
You know what? It might have been Give My Regards to Brooklyn, but that wasn't on, we didn't put it on the record. But you guys did share it last year before we did Celebrate Brooklyn. I think that was the first thing we recorded. But I have to go back and find out now. Oh my gosh. This is a good question. Thank you.
Our last track we're going to play is Yemaya. Am I saying that correctly?
Yemaya, yeah.
Yemaya. Tell us about it.
Yemaya is, you know, the orisha of the ocean, and she's a feminine mother of all Orishas, and she's an Orisha that's dear to my heart. And for those who don't know Orishas, these are sort of the gods, goddesses of the Afro-Cuban or Yoruba religion. And this poem was a poem that is, for all intents and purposes, very true to an experience I had when in ceremony. And I knew that I wanted to do something in homage to her. And I want to shout out Jadelle, who's the incredible vocalist at the end, who helps me kind of conjure this praise of Yemaya.
The name of the album is When the Poems Do What They Do. It drops on Friday, June 9th. There will be an album release event at Legacy Dumbo that night at 7 p.m. My guest has been Aja Monet. Aja, thank you for being with us in studio.
Thank you so much for having me.
Let's go out on, you say it. You say
Yemaya.
I went to see someone about my pain. And he told me that I had to meet the warrior at the edge of the sea. Do not carry anger that is not yours, says El Brujo. And just like that, the sand is a quiet prayer rug under folded knee. Deep washed ashore, rain passing the cheek, a lick of salt from the lip, longing for the wide arms of wind, woozy and restless.